And good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Monday, October 9th, 2006. I'm Lisa Lewis.
And I'm Mike Monkbold.
Pacific Corp says it's far from deciding whether to build three coal-fired power plants by 2014. But Oregon consumer groups and energy officials have wasted little time attacking the idea. The coal-fired plants would be built in Utah and Wyoming. Oregon ratepayers would likely be asked to pay roughly 25% of the bill because Pacific Corp treats its territory as a single system, the Oregonian newspaper reported. Coal-fired plants account for roughly half the electricity produced in the U.S. and 80% of its carbon dioxide emissions, which have been linked to global warming. Before Pacific Corp's proposal can enter the bidding process, it must pass muster with the regulators in each of the states in which it operates. Rulings by Oregon and Utah are considered the most important because the majority of the utility's customers are in those states.
Police in Forest Grove said officers shot to death a man who emerged from his apartment with a pistol in each hand. Officers went to an apartment building where shooting was reported shortly before midnight on Sunday. According to a statement by the Forest Grove police, a man left his apartment with a gun, fired a shot into the air, and then went back inside. The man told the officers he would start shooting and, quote, made other statements that the officers were going to have to shoot him, end quote, the police said. When he came back out, the police said, he raised his weapons and the three officers shot him. His name was not released.
Recalled some 8,500 cartons of its Foxy brand green leaf lettuce sold in seven states amid concern the produce might carry E. coli bacteria. Company officials fear irrigation water used on the lettuce might be contaminated with E. coli. The voluntary lettuce recall comes just days after FBI and FDA agents visited the facilities of two other regional produce companies as part of a criminal investigation into the origins of the recent E. coli spinach scare. To date, 199 people in 26 states have been sickened from E. coli-contaminated spinach. Three have died. No illnesses have been reported from the recalled lettuce, the company said in a press release. Cartons of the recalled Foxy brand lettuce are labeled with lot number 6SL0024 and were distributed to grocery stores October 3rd through 6th. For FSRN, I'm Vinny Lombardo reporting.
A drug that could save thousands of people from going blind is being hailed as a miraculous advance. But the drug, Lucentis, has sparked a row after scientists found that it worked in a similar way to an existing drug that was equally safe and effective and sells at a fraction of the price. Macular degeneration is the most common cause of blindness. The progressive condition slowly destroys the retina, causing the loss of central vision. Until recently, there has been no treatment for macular degeneration, which affects one in three people by the age of 75 and is increasing as the population ages.
About half of Americans believe the scandal over former U.S. Representative Mark Foley's contacts with teenage congressional pages should cost House Speaker Dennis Hastert his leadership post, according to a CNN poll released today. The poll, conducted Friday through Sunday by Opinion Research Corp, found that 52% of the 1,028 adults interviewed think Hastert should step aside. 31% said they think he should keep his post, and 17% had no opinion.
Even came close to defending him. Most of the members who spoke said they were prepared to work on the basis of the elements of draft resolution that I had proposed. They agreed immediately to an experts meeting today at 3 o'clock at which we can consider these elements.
North Korea was not part of the Security Council meeting. Its ambassador to the UN, Park Jo-young, says his country deserves congratulations instead of condemnation.
And I'm very much proud of our scientists and the researchers who have conducted such a very, very successful nuclear underground test.
Both the United Kingdom and France have said if North Korea indeed carried out nuclear test, Chapter 7 would be appropriate. Chinese ambassador to the UN Wang Guangya says the UN should seek firm action, but he refused to comment on how severe a punishment Pyongyang should receive.
The door to solve this issue from diplomatic point of view is still open. Thank you.
Russian President Vladimir Putin calls North Korea to come back to the negotiation table. The U.S. has insisted on a six-party talk with North Korea, which involves China, Russia, Japan, and South Korea. North Korea has proposed to stop its nuclear weapons program if the U.S. could promise never to attack and lift sanctions against the country. After the U.S. rejected the proposal, Pyongyang walked out of the six-party negotiation. George Katasiafikas studies and teaches social movements in Wentworth Institute of Technology in Boston. He is now writing on Korean social movements. He believes the current North Korea crisis is a result of the U.S. foreign policy.
I think that without full responsibilities as a member of the international community, North Korea will continue to go its own way. And it will not have full responsibilities until it has full rights. So the United States should immediately consider signing a treaty of peace with North Korea, pledge never to attack the country, and stop its economic boycott of the North.
Also in this morning's session, the UN Security Council nominated South Korean Foreign Minister Ban Ki-moon to be the next UN Secretary General. For Free Speech Radio News, Ye Mei-xie in Washington, D.C.
The Navy lawyer who took the Guantanamo case of Osama bin Laden's driver to the Supreme Court and won has been passed over for a promotion by the Pentagon. Under the military's up-or-out promotion system, Lieutenant Commander Charles Swift will be forced to retire in March or April, closing a 20-year career of military service. The system requires Navy lieutenant commanders to be forcibly retired if they aren't promoted. The move came about 2 weeks after the Supreme Court sided against the White House and with Swift's client, a Yemeni captive at the U.S. Navy base in southeast Cuba. A Pentagon appointee, Swift embraced the alleged Al-Qaeda sympathizer's defense with a classic defense lawyer's zeal. He said in court that his captive client was an innocent victim in, quote, the dungeon of King George. A startling analogy for the attorney whose commander-in-chief is President George Bush.
A Marine has filed a sworn statement saying that guards at the Guantanamo Detention Center bragged to her about beating detainees. One guard reportedly admitted taking a prisoner by the head and hitting the prisoner's head into the cell door. Other guards talked about hitting prisoners, punching them in the face, and denying them water. The Marine said she learned about the abuse when she met with guards during a trip to the naval base at Guantanamo. The Marine said all of the guards laughed at each other's stories of beating detainees. The Pentagon has announced it is investigating the report.
Canada's Prime Minister has told President Bush that Canada wants a formal explanation for the U.S.'s deportation of a Canadian man to Syria in 2002. FSRN's Allison Benjamin has more.
Canada has sent an official letter of protest to the U.S. for its handling of the case of Mahar Arar. Arar remains on a U.S. no-fly list, even though he has been absolved of any wrongdoing. He was arrested at New York's JFK Airport in 2002 and deported to Syria, where he was tortured and imprisoned for a year under suspicion that he belonged to the Al-Qaeda terrorist network. A recent Canadian inquiry into the case said that U.S. officials violated the Vienna Convention on Consular Relations in their treatment of Arar because they weren't candid with the RCMP or with Canadian consular officials. While in custody in New York, Arar was denied access to Canadian consular officials and was unable to contact a lawyer. Meanwhile, opposition MPs in Canada are criticizing the Canadian government's ongoing delay in apologizing to Mr. Arar. Prime Minister Stephen Harper says Canada cannot apologize until a compensation package is decided upon. For FSRN, I'm Allison Benjamin.
Some details are emerging on just how the U.S. wants to crack down on North Korea after its reported nuclear weapons test today. U.S. diplomats at the United Nations are circulating some ideas for a Security Council resolution containing sanctions against North Korea. The ideas include a trade ban on military and luxury items and the power to inspect all cargo entering or leaving that country. And there'll be a freezing of assets connected with North Korea's weapons programs. Earlier today, according to diplomats, Security Council members condemned North Korea and demanded that it return to the six-party talks on its weapons program.
The high rates of HIV/AIDS in sub-Saharan Africa is aggravating the situation of the elderly in the region. The elderly often have the responsibility of caring for grandchildren left behind by their children who die of the scourge. Unlike in the West, where there is a welfare plan for the aged, many African societies' children have historically been the source of insurance for the aged. Joshua Kalalimpa reports from Kampala.
Civil society organizations in the region who have been meeting in Kampala have now launched an all-Africa campaign to honor, respect and care for the elderly persons. Concerned that the majority of African nations have no policies in place to care for the elderly, the civil society have vowed to press for reforms. Margaret Kamanyire is the chairperson of the Uganda Old Women Welfare Foundation.
I'm appealing to African governments to see that we get some welfare whereby at least an old person can expect to get something which can assist him or her. Let me say, for instance, if at all somebody is expecting at least $5, that one can at least buy for her or him a liter of milk per day.
Older persons used to be regarded as the custodians of knowledge in the traditional African society. But the changing lifestyle, characterized by the movement of young people to urban centers for work, is increasingly taking a toll on the aged. This group of the population contributes a sizable number of the population, but except for only South Africa, no other country in the region has a national policy to address issues of the elderly persons. Honorable Dr. Samuel Yomoki, a representative of workers in Uganda's parliament, admits that the plight of the elderly persons needs to be addressed in many African countries.
You are having a situation where the extended family is dying down. Those days you would find that a grandfather or grandmother would be in a home, would have a son or a daughter who have grandchildren, and they are staying in the same compound together, and they are keeping this old man or woman. But this is a situation now where you are finding the people are going to work and the old person is remaining in the village alone without any care.
In 1990, the United Nations General Assembly designated October 1st as the International Day for the Elderly. The holiday is a result of the UN World Assembly on Aging, which was formed in 1982 to explore and tend to the needs of the elderly in the world. Although the population of the aged people constitutes only 4.8 of the total population of Africa, this percentage translates to a very large number of people, and this is growing. For Free Speech Radio News, this is Joshua Charimpa reporting from Kampala, Uganda.
The United Nations Human Rights Chief said today that several hundred civilians, far more than first thought, may have died in late August attacks by militias in the south of Sudan's violent Darfur region. Early last month, the High Commissioner's Office put the possible death toll from raids near Burum at 38. Many of the 10,000 people in the 45 villages targeted in the attacks, which began on August 28th and lasted into September, were forced to flee. But it revised the toll in its latest reports on the situation in Darfur, drawn up together with the United Nations Assistance Mission in Sudan and based on interviews with survivors of the attacks and other sources. The aim of the assault appeared to be to drive out settlers who had arrived in the area in the 1970s, fleeing drought in the north of Darfur, it said.
Authorities in northeastern Somalia have sent more than 1,000 Ethiopians back home in a crackdown on human trafficking. The autonomous region of Puntland in northeastern Somalia has become a hub for people traffickers taking illegal immigrants to Yemen. Most of the immigrants are from Somalia, Ethiopia, and Sudan, trying to escape hardship in their countries.
40 countries worldwide are facing food emergencies and require external assistance because of floods, drought, and conflict, with the crisis in the Darfur region of Sudan remaining the most pressing humanitarian problem. The United Nations Food Agency added in a report released today of a warning that things may get worse in the strife-torn region. The Food and Agriculture Organization's latest assessment forecasts that world cereal production in 2006 now stands at just over 2,000 million tons, almost 8 million tons down since the previous report. The FAO also said floods and conflict-related displacement have harmed the food situation in 15 other countries throughout Africa, including Somalia, where a, quote, food crisis, end quote, is affecting 2 million people.
And that's the KBOO Evening News for Monday, October 9th, 2006. marking the 1,848th day since Bush made the declaration that he'd catch Osama bin Laden dead or alive. If you have any questions or comments about what you heard this evening, please call us at 503-231-8032 and leave a message on extension 203, or send an email to pmnews@kabu.org. That goes for news tips as well. Call us with your news tips at 503-231-8032, extension 203. You are listening to KBOO at 90.7 FM in Portland, in Corvallis at 100.7 FM on translator K264AA, and in Hood River at 91.9 FM on translator K220HR. You can log on to our website at kbu.fm. Our producer for tonight's newscast is Michael Munkfold. Our assistant producer is Ross Egan. Our AP Wire editor is Brendan Wright. Special thanks to our reporters Rachel Baer and Ross Egan. Our engineer is Jeff Lovell. The Cable Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Lisa Loving. I'm Lisa Lewis.
And I'm Mike Munkfold. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO at 7:30, it's the Abe and Joe Show with Abe Proctor and Joe Uris. At 9, it's the biannual Best Book Special, hosted by Jim Schumach. His guests are local booksellers from Annie Bloom's Books, Looking Glass Bookstore, and St. John's Books. They'll have recommendations for great reading, and there will be many books available for thank you gifts for your pledges of support. At 10:30, on stage and studio, D. May Roberts welcomes members of Portland Center Stage's production of the classic West Side Story. And at 11, it's Democracy Now! Stay tuned. Stay tuned for Rachel Beal's Week in Activism following this newscast. And we'd like to remind you that we're in the midst of the KBOO Community Radio Fall Membership Drive. And we're asking for your continued support. Please make a pledge by calling 503-232-8818 or 877-500-KBOO. And here's KBOO's own Rachel Beal with the Week in Activism.
Best trained, best educated, best equipped, best prepared, troops refuse to fight. Matter of fact, it's safe to say that they would rather switch than fight.
Good evening. For KBOO Evening News, I'm Rachel Beal with this Week in Action, including some educational events to fuel activist fire this time around. Tuesday, the 10th, the League of Women Voters is holding a ballot measure forum with presenters speaking on the pros and cons to inform voters before this November's election. This is at the boardroom at the Multnomah Building, 501 Southeast Hawthorne, 7 to 9 p.m. Wednesday, it's Books to Prisoners mailing night. Mailing nights are 5 to 8 p.m. every Monday and Wednesday, and mostly consists of responding to request letters from prisoners by putting together packages. The new workspace is at 4733 Northeast 17th Avenue. Also, if you would like to donate books to the group, drop boxes are at Laughing Horse, in other words, and Black Rose Collective Bookstore, as well as Rocco's Pizza and Hollywood Theater, with prisoners requesting dictionaries and thesauruses most often. Thursday, there's a community forum on the Bush administration's domestic surveillance program. President Bush has authorized domestic spying on American citizens without obtaining any court approval at any time. You can join an expert panel for a discussion on whether domestic spying is lawful and permitted under the U.S. Constitution. Forum is at Portland State University, Smith Memorial Student Union, in room 298, 1825 Southwest Broadway, at 7 p.m. Thursday night, Chad from Food Fight Vegan Grocery is also inviting everyone to his birthday, which will be a Shack 7 letter writing party and fundraiser dinner. This is at Pirates Tavern, 2839 Northwest St. Helens Road, 7 p.m. to 11 p.m. Friday the 13th, there is a benefit film showing with proceeds going to help pass Measure 4647 for Oregon's campaign finance reform. The film, from producers of Outfoxed and Walmart, The High Cost of Low Price, is Iraq for Sale, telling the story of who gets killed and who makes a killing when corporations go to war. The film is showing at First Unitarian Church, Southwest 12th and Salmon, at 7 p.m. Saturday, an educational series on Israel and Palestine, Deadly Distortion, a history and case study of print media bias and reporting about Palestine and Israel, by Allison Weir, nationally known journalist and executive director of If Americans Knew. This educational series is at Central Lutheran Church, one block north of Broadway, on Northeast 21st, 7:30 p.m. to 9 p.m. And Sunday, after the successful launch of One Nation, Many Faiths, Vote 2006 Town Hall meeting here in Portland on August 23rd, the newly formed Interfaith Alliance decided to kick off a series of services at different houses of faith. The Alliance seeks to present an alternative to extreme right-wing politics masquerading as faith. The first of Faith in Action services will take place this Sunday at St. Michael All Angels Episcopal Church, 1704 Northeast 43rd, at 4 p.m. to 5:30. That's all for this Week in Action. If you have events that you would like included in the calendar, email kbooactivist@yahoo.com. For KBOO Evening News, I'm Rachel Biel.
Hey, and I'm Lisa Loving. We have 6 minutes, 5 minutes left to talk about why you should be contributing to the KBOO Evening News. I'm joined by these super cool friends of mine, Noah Eaton and Todd Greblo, in the Palace of Pledge. And I just want to say, you guys, you know Rachel Biel, she does this segment, The Week in Power. You know how she got that segment? We put this little thing at the end of the news that said, we want to encourage someone to come and do an activism community calendar that's just activism. And you know what she did? She picked up the phone, she called us up, and now she does it. Isn't that a trip?
It is amazing. And I mean, I too am a regular KBOO, a proud KBOO member here, and I too want to get you hooked too by calling 503-232-8818. Or if you live outside the City of Roses, 1-877-500-KBOO. And it's actually quite an interesting origin, you know, of how Rachel Biel, you know, got started here, much like our backyard friend Edison Carter did. He just came in there and he said, look, I want to do an environmental series and everything. And so, you know, I helped him produce this program. We selected some theme music and Chris Merrick helped him out here. And then basically, pow, we have Our Backyard. And now Rachel Biel is in likewise with Weekend Activism. Now, you know, she got, you know, Fight the Power put together. You know, she created her you know, theme music. And pow, she has her own kind of community calendar focused on activism events. And you too, you know, we encourage all kinds of listeners all across the community to volunteer in the news department too. And you too can create your own news feed. But for now, you know, call 503-232-8818. And now, get your voice heard.
Yes, you're supporting journalists who are doing grassroots reporting. We're not taking orders from anyone telling us what to cover. We have reporters who create their own beat, decide what they want to cover, and bring you the truth unadulterated. And the way to support that, if you appreciate hearing that for an hour every Monday through Friday here on KBOO, is to call 503-232-8818. If you're tuning in outside the Portland metro area, you can call 1-877-500-5266. That's a toll-free call to become a member.
We truly are a community here. I mean, look at all the excitement, you know, happening back here in Pledge Central. You could come down here and see for yourself. We're located at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. We're right behind the Juniper Hotel here in Portland on the east side of the Willamette River. So you could stop on by and, you know, you could pledge, make your pledge in person. We could give you a nice tour of the facility. We can, you know, provide you with a cup of coffee. You know, we could talk all kinds about current events and anything. Just come on down here and see for yourself about exactly what makes this a community atmosphere. And you could do so by calling 503-232-8818. Or if you live outside the City of Roses, 1-877-500-KBOO.
My brother Noah is like a train on a track. Sometimes he's just going. He's just going. It's totally cool, though. We love him. We couldn't live without him in the evening news department. And his tie-dye T-shirt, Noah Eaton, never shows up in this building except in a different tie-dye T-shirt every time.
That's a lie.
It's not. It is not a lie. But anyway, we're passing the hat for KBOO. We're giving you one last chance at those tickets for a $60 pledge to see the U.S. versus John Lennon at Fox Regal Tower. It's the documentary about John Lennon and secret government surveillance. It's got to be the ultimate fan movie for KBOO listeners. In 90 seconds, we're going to Labor Radio, but 503-232-8818 is the number to call. 1-877-500-KBOO. You guys, just give them another minute. Give them another minute of why they should be calling. I mean, we need you to call. Do you need to know anything else? But keep going.
Well, the 55 minutes or so that you heard previously on the KBOO News is reason enough. If you need more reason, well, why not give a $75 pledge and pick up one of the fine T-shirts we have on display back here at 20 Southeast 8th. We've got the famous KBOO versus the Mediazillas T-shirt by local artist Matt Worker. It's very popular, very nice. There's even a KBOO News booth down in the bottom left-hand corner, so you can see KBOO volunteers in action in art.
And yes, I do wear that shirt too, besides tie-dye. So call 503-232-8818, and that shirt could be yours for a $60 minimum pledge, or 1-877-500-KBOO. Again, we're going to be going in 20 seconds, but I'm going to repeat the number one more time, 503-232-8818. And again, if you live outside Stumptown, 1-877-500-KBOO. Take it away, Labor Radio.
Attention nonprofit job seekers, Portland's largest networking forum, Idealist.org's Nonprofit Career Fair, will be held at Portland State University on October 19th. This is an opportunity to connect directly with representatives from as many as 60 to 70 organizations in one space about current and future employment, internship, and volunteer opportunities. Additionally, free information sessions offering nonprofit career advice will be available to all job seekers. The fair will be held in the ballroom on the third floor of the Smith Memorial Student Union at Portland State University on October 19th from 11 to 3 p.m. For more information, go to idealist.org/fairs. KBOO is a proud co-sponsor of this event.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Teamsters Local 206, helping Oregon's working families fight for good jobs and a better future. For information about how the Teamsters can help you win respect at work, the number is 503-251-2344. And also by AFSCME Local 88, protecting worker rights and fighting to improve the wages and working conditions of members who work for Multnomah County, Central City Concern, Transition Projects, and American Friends Service Committee. More information at 503-239-9858 or www.local88.ws.
Labor Radio. My name's Ken Allen. I'm one of your co-hosts.
And I'm Mary Beth Healy.
We're gonna have a couple guests later on, but before the pledge break, we decided we're just going to start, maybe it'll become our annual election year rant, and talk about some of the things that really have us upset.
Well, Ken, I know I'm actually kind of excited to have this because there's never an election. You know, for those of you who don't know, I actually moved here from Florida. And so I am outraged today around the hypocrisy of the anti-worker forces in this country, you know, ranging from, you know, wanting to do something about health care and never doing anything about it to being the chair of the caucus for missing and exploited children and writing salacious emails to teens on the internet. And I just think that the more I go down the list, the more outraged I am.
Yeah, I think it's a strange time the last week and a half. We had a major book published by Bob Woodward about the lies and deception around us going into war. And instead of focusing attention on that, we're talking about emails from Congressman Foley. And I do think those are serious and that we need to take it seriously. But we can't lose sight between now and Election Day, just 29 days away, that we have huge issues for the working class. And issues like health care, wages, minimum wage, that affect our pocketbook. And that those are the issues that we're hoping that our labor radio listeners are thinking about when they go to the polls.
And it really is what we should be thinking about. You know, folks talk about why do voters vote against their self-interest? And we, I think, have an obligation to try to educate people about those issues that really matter to our pocketbooks.
And where else are you going to hear about working class issues and why you should vote based on those issues other than labor radio here on KBOO? I think, you know, the other thing that's got me upset is the tone and the tenor of these negative campaigns and the amount of money that are behind the negative campaigns. You, if you look at Ron Saxton's got TV blanketed, that's all negative campaigning. You look at this guy Mike Erickson out in Congressional District 5, all negative stuff, hundreds of thousands of dollars paying for these ads. And it's only working people and our organizations and environmental groups and other people's groups that can turn that around and make sure that our issues get heard and that we get our vote out there.
I'm just wondering, you know, if you have any idea, Ken, about what turnout is projected to be, because I think that in a way, some of this is designed to turn voters off from politics, and it really should work in the reverse and hack us off so much that we get out and we knock on doors or talk to our friends and neighbors, give money to the candidate of our choice or the ballot measure of our choice, and help make a progressive Oregon more of a reality for all of us.
Well, I want our listeners to make sure that they understand these negative campaigns are designed for one thing. They're a strategy of the conservatives to drive down the vote and to get people discouraged about turning out to vote. They're not designed to pump up their candidates. They're designed to drive down the vote, you know, a percentage here, a percentage there, getting people not to turn out. I don't know what the projection is, but we need to, you know, everybody that listens to this show, listens to KBOO, needs to make sure they get out and vote, that they get their neighbors out to vote, because this is a key critical election. It's key to our state and to our country. So I'm excited about people getting out to vote. I've been phone banking and canvassing. People are engaged. You just got to keep them talking about the issues that matter
and not get distracted by the weapons of mass distraction, as I like to say.
So we want to at this point remind our listeners that you can only hear this kind of working class message on labor radio from union people that are advocating for your interests. So we're going to have a pledge break. And get those phones ringing and contribute some money to KBOO on behalf of Labor Radio.
And this is Todd out here with Noah, giving you a pledge drive break here. And please call 503-232-8818 and become a member of KBOO.
Oh, indeed. And just now they were talking, you know, about the negative campaigns and how people, you know, are spending millions of dollars this campaign cycle, you know, just attacking each other. And, you know, as a fellow volunteer, you know, here at KBOO Radio, I understand that completely, you know. And I too feel that often, you know, our kind of media infrastructure is often what I like to think of as despiritualized. And that's why not only did I coin a new word recently, but I also have it's also my new nickname, and it's the Sagittarizer. And for those of you who are not quite familiar with astrology, Sagittarius is actually the symbol that most represents optimism, positive growth, and the pursuit and love of knowledge and everything. And so basically, that's kind of what I do. I like to balance the yin and yang of the newscast, basically, kind of, you know, make sure that, you know, you focus on what's wrong with the picture, but moreover, you see what's right with the picture too, because positive, you know, progress is a two-way street, and that's how I like to, you know, organize a newscast whenever I'm producing on Wednesdays. And so that's what I believe in. I believe in balancing that yin and yang in the newscast to make sure that both the good and the bad is presented to you in a balanced fashion. And so you can make sure this conduit is made possible by calling 503-232-8818, or if you live outside Stumptown, 1-877-500-KBOO.
And coming up later on radio, They'll have Andy Stern. He's the head of the SEIU, and he has a book called A Country That Works. Now, wouldn't it be nice to live in a country that works? I sure would like to sometime in my lifetime. You can help make that possible by calling 503-232-8818. And with a $75 minimum pledge, you can get Andy Stern's book, A Country That Works. That's for just, again, a $75 minimum pledge. Support KBOO. Learn about the people who, you know, make this country work as best they can. That's the working people out there, the people who listen to Labor Radio, and the people like you who support KBOO and listen and hopefully become members at 503-232-8818 outside the Portland area, 1-877-500-5266.
So as you were pointing out earlier, you know, we give away T-shirts too, you know, that's that, you know, our own volunteers, you know, make for us. He was talking to about the KBOO versus the MediaZilla's T-shirt, for instance, which our own Matt Worker put together, and it's a for a $60 minimum pledge, you could get your own sort of it's like a comic strip almost, where you have like three major Godzilla reptilian figures, you know, crushing downtown Portland, and then there's this fellow at the bottom who kind of represents the underdog in society that says, it's a bird, it's a plane, it's community radio. And then you have the KBOO booth, you know, located in the bottom left part of the shirt. And that shirt could be yours for a $60 minimum pledge. And you could get it by calling 503-232-8818.
Yes, you can be fashionable with your clothing, with your T-shirts, and be fashionable in your activism. Become a member of KBOO. Support the radio station that puts these perspectives on the air that you're not going to hear very much in the mainstream media. 503-232-8818 is the number to call. I recall a few years ago when I was volunteering for the news at KBOO, Jim Hightower had a full-length show on a Disney-affiliated network, and he tried to get a some union advertising on his show because it was popular, but it wasn't bringing in the corporate media dollars. So he tried to get some unions to advertise, and the big mouse said, no way, Jim, sorry. So he was no longer at Disney. He's now on an independent station and also does commentary here on KBOO. So support independent voices. 503-232-8818.
Talk about Jim Hightower, you know, here I just got a pledge for $75, and we'd like to thank you. Yeah, T-shirts are a $75 minimum pledge and everything, and you can pick up any one of our T-shirts right here. It's a half-lin bargain, so I'd encourage you all to call 503-232-8818. Or if you live outside the City of Roses, 1-877-500-KBOO.
Yes, and we have Jim Hightower in the studio making a surprise guest appearance. How often does that happen?
You know, once a day, you know, during the weekdays. I mean, unfortunately, you know, the weekends, you know, I don't get, you know, much play, you know, because the news, like, the news cycles, you know, get interrupted during the weekends and everything, and as much as I have to focus on time to lay over the weekends, you know, there's just not enough time. But nonetheless, Hightower Radio is yours Monday through Friday, and you can make sure it stays on the airwaves by calling 503-232-8818.
All right, and we're about to go back to Labor Radio, so keep those phones ringing. We have a $360 pledge here. We've got some money toward that, but we need just a little bit more to help pay the $80 an hour that it takes to run this station. So do your part. Dial 503-232-8818 outside the Portland area, 1-877-500-5266. Back to Labor Radio.
And thank you for the pictures. Where else can you hear Jim Hightower but on Labor Radio? So we've got as a guest tonight a woman who's written a book called Jacked, How Conservatives Are Picking Your Pocket. Nomi Prinz, welcome to Labor Radio.
Thank you. Thank you for having me tonight.
Well, thank you. This book is does everything to tell me how we're getting ripped off.
It definitely was geared to do that. But also when I wrote it, I actually went around the country trying to talk to people about what their lives were like and where they felt that the most, and not just to, you know, put forth all of the negatives as you were just talking about, but also to say, you know, what are our ideas of what we should do, what we should change, how we've come to this point, and what's in our wallets that directly links to what's going on in Washington and, card by card.
And, you know, Nami, I have to say, I really thought that that was a really unique way to help people understand. You know, I think people are really busy, as you identified in your book, and kind of closed into their world, right? And so this is a way I really thought was fabulous to say, you know, every one of us have these cards, a driver's license card, an employer card, a health care card, maybe, except for 47 million of us that have no health insurance, but that's a different story. And what came up with that idea, and how did people respond to that?
Well, I mean, literally what I had wanted to do was get away from just writing a book about politics per se and policies and just start from the ground up. And I wanted to come up with something that we did all have, that we were all linked by, that no matter, you know, what kind of lives we had or where we lived in the country or whatever, we could start with something in common. And part of my idea was to think about how to make it accessible for people who aren't thinking about these issues in political terms. Because ultimately, I wanted people to be like, hey, that's me. And even if I don't vote, and even if I don't think about it, and even if I don't understand or think of, or have time to be concerned with how it's directly related to a law that gets passed in Washington, here's a way to break it down and make it easy and get people to that point. And I really wanted it to be, even though this stuff is so heavy and so depressing in so many ways, a light read.
It was, and very I think that issue of breaking it down for people, right, was one of the best things I found about the book, because, again, people are kind of boxed into their own issue. I did also want to ask you, you know, I kept struggling with remembering Jacked, right? I could get the total rest of it, but there was another six-letter word that I kept wanting to inject in there instead of Jacked. But
yeah, that was... Yeah, I would have had to do
a little
stars and kind of like exclamation points in the middle of the word.
Yeah, that's one we can't use on radio.
We can't use that, although apparently Jon Stewart had that exact sort of type of title on the front of one of his shows, but with all those sort of extra characters in between. But yeah, we definitely debated that. But
I think
I mean, the thing is, too, the idea of Jacked is very, like, visceral. It's not picking your pocket. It's like, it's much more direct than that. Again, when you think about it, when I talk to people around the country, their lives are more direct than that. You know, whether someone's driving 300 miles, you know, a week for work and feeling the pinch of doubling of gas prices, or the guy I opened my book with is from New Orleans. He's a tour guide, and he got doubly hurt by Katrina, but also by the fact that gas prices doubled on him. And while that was happening, while he was trying to figure out how to get his life and his business and just his dignity back, you know, you have these guys hanging out in Washington. I mean, the oil executives in front of the Senate, not under oath, saying, well, you know, those profits, that we needed that money. Like, we yes, things doubled. Yes, we had things really hiked at the pumps, but we, quote, needed that money. And you're just like, well, so does everybody in the country. That's need right. That money, but we don't have the luxury of standing up in front of the Senate Commerce Committee and explaining that. So what I wanted to do with this book is actually explain, look, here are the ways that we work our behinds off, and here are the ways that you guys are not only not helping, you're making it worse, and this is what we're going to do about it. And each card in your wallet has that connection, whether it is your employee ID card, you know, talking to Andy before, whether it's the idea that, you know, people who were in unions or are in unions or just merely thought that when they signed a contract with their employer under certain benefits that some people get, many don't anymore, it actually meant something, and that increasingly it doesn't, and in reality it should. You know, we are all working in return for something. Not, we are not sort of burdens to a corporation. We are actually helping the corporation, and we deserve to be treated that way. So I have a chapter on the employee ID and sort of the history of that and what it means to people.
I think this is a great book for given to one of our union members or a neighbor, a political relative. You know, they know that they're getting messed over by the economy, but they don't know the facts behind it, and they just have this terrible gut feeling. Your book is a great book for you know, each chapter summarizing each different way that they're getting jacked. You know, whether it's the credit cards and the fees that they pay when they use the ATM, or the exorbitant fee they pay when they over, you know, go over their balance in their account. You do a great job of articulating that for working people.
Well, thank you. I did try, and I think also a lot of those people are in the book. So I hope that also the idea of, you know, I actually spent time out in Portland, for example. I talked to some wonderful women out at the Kennedy School, I believe it was, where we got to have a lovely meal, but also talk about what people are doing in their sort of regular lives to help themselves and to help their communities in the absence of some of the government programs that have been cut, like Head Start or No Child Left Behind, that impact single parents who want to go to school at night or go back to school and are struggling with the burden of how much it costs to get that education, with what happens, for example, when their children need to be watched during that same moment, and actually getting together and pulling the community together to raise money, which is absolutely something a community can do and a union can do, but also something that the government should not only be doing, but should not be making worse.
That's exactly right. For those of you who've just joined us, this is Labor Radio, and we're speaking with Nomi Prinz, the author of Jacked, How Conservatives Are Picking Your Pocket, Whether You Voted for Them or Not.
So the other thing that really strikes me about the book is when you use examples, you know, out of a person's wallet, like this credit card thing. Can you tell us a little bit about both the exorbitant profits now and, you know, what created those?
Yeah, well, the credit card thing was interesting, because when I went around and asked people what's the most important card in your wallet, you know, it was the driver. There was a lot of cards that we ultimately talked about. It was the driver's license. It was the credit card was usually one of the second or third cards, and then also was sometimes the ATM card, because often it was sort of the same card. It could be used as a debit or could be used as a credit. But there are so many ways that are unchecked, that are unregulated, that credit card companies and banks make money. For example, $4.3 billion a year in ATM fees, and in just the money that banks charge you to take your money out of other banks. That's a net profit of $4.3 billion. You'll pay $1.50 to $2 for something that costs them 27 cents to perform. And on the credit card side, it's even worse, because, you know, and everyone has stories about this. I put one in the book that particularly hit me, but I, you know, spoke to so many people. I'm sure everybody listening has some situation where, you know, I talked to this woman. She had two kids. She was pregnant with her third. She had to have a cesarean to deliver her third child, and she's at home after the hospital, home with her mom, on her couch, nursing her child, and she starts getting these calls from her credit card company, which she had been with for years, which she had diligently paid her balance and her minimum, whatever it was, never missed a payment, was, as she said, I was a good credit customer. And, you know, she had this baby under these circumstances, and they literally harassed her to the point where she ultimately, you know, changed companies. But there's just no rules against that. And then they charged her a $39 late fee, which is very common. And then they jacked up her interest rate from like a 10.4% to like a 28.99%. They basically tripled her interest rate. So when you talk about how people ultimately go into bankruptcy or have real problems paying back their debts, it's not because people are deadbeats like Congress would like to discuss or like credit card companies would like to tell them. It's because stuff like that happens. Because all of a sudden you're paying one thing, and the price triples on you.
Right. Now,
and so what Congress did was, rather than address that point, they addressed the point of bankruptcy reform, quote-unquote, and they passed this Consumer Protection Act, which did not protect consumers unless they were CEOs of companies, to basically make it harder for people to declare bankruptcy and make it impossible for them to keep their homes, which the Republicans wrote in as line items, if they declared it because they were disabled or had a health emergency or came back from a war or were fired from a company that might itself have been declaring bankruptcy. So not only do they not help and say, well, what's the problem? Maybe these tripling of rates and these finance charges and everything else. No, they blame the individual, and then they make it harder for them to get out of it.
Well, you know, it's it's interesting. I work in healthcare advocacy, Nomi, and so I like to beat up on the drug, hospital, and insurance companies and corporations. And those stories are really very compelling, and I think another example of what an easy read your book is, because people can automatically associate, whether it's themselves or a friend or family member, their own example. And I always joke with friends that the once I solve the healthcare crisis, that my next big corporate entity to go after are the banks, because it's so outrageous. You can't get credit if you pay things on time and if you pay cash, and it's just such a backward system that it's just another way, as you so rightly say, that people are getting jacked. And one thing I found very interesting, kind of in the outside of your wallet section of the book, was your findings around healthcare being the most important issue that people discussed with you. And while I'm not really surprised about that, I'm wondering, what did people, I mean, I read the book, so, but I'd like you to talk a little bit about what you heard people say they wanted in a new healthcare system.
Well, I was actually surprised to find that to be the card that people, and when I say, like, people were most talking about that as being their most important card, I'm talking about people in all sorts of stages of life and finance. People who were destitute to people who were at very good corporations. You know, this one guy in that chapter on healthcare, who's a Hollywood producer, who is working, you know, for ABC Disney, who has, like, a full health plan, but is also a dual Canadian citizen and has absolutely no plan at all to, like, retire in America because he is just afraid. And this is someone with money, to the people that were destitute, who were literally without, you know, who couldn't get health care until they were in such a high stage of cancer or whatever it might have been, that they were basically putting their lives on the line. So you run the gamut of people, and it is the number one fear that I got across states, across voting records, across classes, was health care, because people who had it were afraid it wouldn't cover them in an emergency. People who didn't have it were afraid that they would have an emergency and not be able to take care of it. And people who were in the middle just couldn't pay for it. I mean, it was the one number. If I asked, what's the most important card in your wallet? What are you paying for gas each week or each month? What are you paying on your credit card balance each month? I got, you know, a little bit of haziness. If I asked, what is your health care premium for the 47 million that I, net of the 47 million that don't have it, everybody to the penny knew not only what it was, but how it had doubled in the last 4 years and how their deductibles had doubled in the last 4 years. Meanwhile, health insurance companies were second only to oil companies last year in terms of profitability.
Well, and it used to be that the prescription drug companies were the number one company on the Fortune 500. Actually, only just the top 10 drug companies, right, reaped more than 50% of the profits of the total Fortune 500, until this latest price gouging from the oil companies, which I think Ken actually wanted to talk a little bit about.
Well, I also wanted to say, you know, I think one of the best groups to read your book, Nomi, would be some Democrat politicians. So that
amen.
I would love for the Democrats to read it, because I literally, with all of this, and I think you're mentioning on your last segment, you know, all this stuff about Foley and all the, you know, all of that stuff is, you know, bizarre and kind of entertaining, but it's not actually pertaining to anyone's real life.
Yeah,
and,
you know,
and I think that you know, the issues in Jack are merely the issues that you think about every day, whether it's how much you pay for gas, whether it's whether you can afford your credit card bill, how much it costs you to use a bank, whether you can be secure in your home in terms of health or pension or having a job or getting paid properly. They're all issues that are very, very real to everyone on an everyday basis.
You know, in your book, you talk to an auto worker from Oklahoma named David, and David talks about now how he measures politicians, and I just love this quote. He says, the present administration in D.C. were born rich and are going to die rich. When I vote, you know what I do? I ask, did this person ever know what it's like to be like me? I think that is the best way to look at politicians. And I, you know, we've got a governor's race right now that you can do that, and it's so clear. So you're coming to Portland this week on Thursday to do a reading?
I am. I'm very psyched. It's the first stop on my trip out west. I'm going to be at the Looking Glass Bookstore.
At 318 Southwest Taylor at 7 p.m.
Yes, on Thursday night at 7. And I actually went back to Portland twice when I was doing this book. I had never been there before, and I went there
probably
like
in the summer, huh, Nami? Not
to
interrupt.
Talk to people, and I had to come back because there was a few that I missed that I really wanted to interview. They're in the book, and I'm really psyched about coming to Portland on Thursday.
And are you going to sign some of your books there for people?
Huh?
You can sign some books there at the Looking Glass?
Will you sign books?
I will be signing books. I'll be reading from the book, and really I hope to have, you know, more conversations. I know, you know, the people I talked to in Portland are awesome, and I know that you both have, well, obviously we all have lives, but also some really good ideas and some really good passion. And so I look forward to being a really good exchange and reading, and I'll be signing books there as well.
Great. Thank you for being our guest, and I have a feeling we're going to hear from you again. You've been a great guest, and fit right in with what we're trying to talk.
Well, thank you very much, and I hope you guys can make it too.
Okay, thank you. And we're going to go back to our pictures.
I'd like you to get on the phone right away and call 503-232-8818. Or if you live outside Stumptown, 1-877-500-KABU. We are a very superstitious bunch here at KABU. If you go to our membership central and see for yourself, we have our good friend Devin here just lit our so-called alleged money-drawing candle. And we also have here some company. We have Sir Gnomingham the Gnome. We have a totem pole dressed as a pirate. And we also have our Rosie the Riveter clock hanging right there.
Which
and so we're
we
all in good company
it.
Here.
And the clock says, we can do it. And we can do it with your help if you call 503-232-8818. We have a couple of people who have called in. Thank you very much to Eliana from Portland, a brand new member. Thank you for joining us, Eliana. And Denise, also from Portland, who is renewing her membership. They called 503-232-8818 and helped us along toward our goal of $400. We're about halfway to that, and we're about halfway through the show. We just need a couple more calls at 503-232-8818 or outside the Portland area at 1-877-500-5266.
We can do it!
And we can do it!
And speaking of which, you know, this really is a gift that keeps on giving. I mean, not only do you, you know, pat yourself on the back with that good feeling, you know, that you've done something good for the community at large by keeping this megaphone accessible to, you know, regular folks, you know, like you and I. We also give away, you know, gifts just for the heck of it. For a $75 minimum pledge, for instance, it's featured on this very program. Andy Stern, you know, is on this program edition. He does A Country That Works is the author of this new book, and it basically takes a look at the working people of the U.S. by a longtime union activist, and that's what Andy Stern does, and that's what he believes in. And it could be yours for a $75 minimum pledge, which, you know, is basically 21 cents a day or $1.47 a week when you really look at it. That's a $75 yearly pledge, and that could be yours if you call 503-232-8818.
Yeah, as we were saying during our the Bob Dylan special earlier today, that contribution that you make to KABU is also tax-deductible, and unlike the rest of your tax money, it's not going to support war or corporations or any of the mean, nasty, ugly things that KABU exposes on a daily basis with our news and public affairs programming. So give a little bit to KABU, give a little bit less to Uncle Sam by calling 503-232-8818 or outside the Portland area 1-877-500-5266.
We'd like to take a moment too to thank some local restaurants that have been helping, you know, feed our volunteers, you know, who have been waiting patiently, you know, for your call. Oh, there goes one right now.
Excellent.
And the Grindel's Cafe provided breakfast for us. They're located at 729 East Burnside Avenue. For lunch, Faye Petrokowski, apologize if I didn't get the last name correct. They also contributed lunch to us, and then for dinner just a little while ago, Alexis Restaurant provided us at 215 West Burnside Avenue. And you know, this is part of what we mean by community too. I mean, it's a collaborative effort. I mean, we all play different roles, you know, here, and it's evident when you you know, you could go by in person at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. We're all here, you know, broadcasting live right behind the Juniper Hotel. We're the little Robin Egg Blue building. And you could come in and see for yourself. We'll give you a nice tour of the facility. We'll give you a cup of coffee. You could sit back and listen to a bunch of jibs and such. And, you know, have to put up, you know, with our reiterating of the pledge drive thing. So, you know, you could come on down in person, but otherwise you could call 503-232-8818, and that too would be a great noble act.
Yes, we don't have multi-millionaires with deep pockets paying for all the stuff here. We do it a little bit at a time. We have volunteers here. I'm a volunteer. Noah's a volunteer. Pretty much everyone, anyway, that you've heard on the air is a volunteer. We've got volunteers answering the phones. We've got volunteers working in the air room right now, upgrading our equipment in there. We're making a small donation of our time. We just need you to make a small donation out of your wallet at 503-232-8818 to keep this group effort going.
A legend money drawing candle, don't fail us now. 503-232-8818. And again, if you live outside the City of Roses, 1-877-500-KBOO. Any final moments?
Well, the money drawing candle has worked pretty well. We just need a few more calls to make our goal for this program. Give us a call, 503-232-8818. And now back to more Labor Radio.
So this is Literary Labor Radio tonight. We just ended our conversation with Nomi Prinz, the author of Jacked, How Conservatives Are Picking Your Pocket, Whether You Voted for Them or Not. My name's Mary Beth Healy. I'm your co-host here with...
And I'm Ken Allen.
And we're going to have a special interview that our friend Don McIntosh did with Andy Stern, who is the author, as you have heard during the pledge drive, of A Country That Works. So we're going to take a little break here and put you in with the interview with Don and President Andy Stern of the Service Employees International Union, and now an author.
Start wearing purple, wearing purple. Start wearing purple for me now. All your sanity and wits, they will all vanish, I promise. It's just a matter of time. So, yeah.
Good evening and welcome to Labor Radio, a weekly program about the labor movement, organizing, and working people on KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. I'm Don McIntosh. For this portion of the hour, I'll be talking with Andy Stern, who joins us by phone from Pennsylvania. Andy Stern, welcome to Labor Radio.
Thank you very much, Don.
For those who may not know Andy Stern, who isn't a household word just yet, I guess I could describe you as probably the most controversial labor union leader in the country, certainly the most talked about. You are the head of the second largest union in the country, that's Service Employees International Union, and last year you led a group of unions to leave the AFL-CIO, which is the premier labor union federation. It's been around for 50 years now. You are now apparently the author of a book, A Country That Works, Getting America Back on Track, and you'll be in Portland to talk about that. That's next Wednesday, October 17th at noon at Powell's Burnside. Also, for those who can't make the daytime event, apparently appearance at the Lucky Labrador Pub that evening at 7 p.m. again, October 17th. Andy, I wanted to, we have a few minutes to talk with you about your book today. Maybe I could start with, why did you write this, and who's it for?
Well, basically, Don, I really love this country. I think America's a gift, and the greatest gift is the American dream. For generation after generation, people have come to America. All they wanted to do was work hard, and all they hoped for was their work would be valued and rewarded. But even more importantly, they wanted their kids to do better than their parents. So what does it mean now that 52% of all American parents actually think their kids are going to do worse than they are? And unfortunately, the statistics are sadly beginning to bear them out. And I wrote this book because, you know, I think America doesn't quite understand how profound transformative and economic moment we're living in, how this is not our father's and grandfather's economy, that America is now in a global trade moment in history, and that we need to make a plan. America needs a plan about how we're going to compete in a global economy and how we're going to make work pay for all Americans. And I thought There was something to be said about my life in the union movement, the changes we made in the AFL-CIO, and I offer some solutions about what I think we should do here in America.
Right. I mean, you say this is not, we're not living in the economy of our fathers and grandfathers, and yet I think you probably have said that we still have the unions of our fathers and grandfathers. What's holding up change in the union movement?
Well, I think the union movement is, you know, like most people and most elected leaders and even business leaders in this country, you know, change is hard. You know, we always like to look back. I try to say to people we're as far today from the New Deal as the New Deal was from the Civil War. And I'm sure Franklin Roosevelt admired Abraham Lincoln, but he didn't build an economy around the 1865. We're not going to build an economy around 1935. You know, the world has changed, and I think the labor movement's been slow to get to it. And what happens too much in any organization is, you know, you kind of do the same thing over and over again. And in our case, we were growing smaller, not stronger, and it's clear that we needed to make a fundamental change, and then some unions were ready to do it.
You know, your union is based in healthcare, in the public sector, and in building services. Now, in healthcare and building, and actually, all three of those are kinds of jobs that can't be outsourced. And I wonder, you know, what were the reaction to some of your ideas of unions that didn't have that luxury, that maybe were in industries that were really getting decimated?
Well, first of all, I think we always have to do the best we can with the situations we have. You know, whether that's the fact that it makes no sense to have 13 different unions and airlines who are not coordinating, cooperating, whether it's the fact that we actually have more cars being produced in the United States, they're just not being produced by the big three, and we didn't organize all the transplants. And then there are industries like steel and textiles that are very, very complicated industries, and that require a national plan. I mean, we are not going to stop trade by simply hoping, you know, that American employers are going to keep their jobs here. We have to do things like change our healthcare system. We have to decide that we don't want to fix our battleships with foreign steel. We have to decide we don't want uniforms made for our soldiers in other countries or their bulletproof vests. I mean, there are decisions that countries can make if you have a plan that can help stem the tide of unfair change and keep national security. And at the same time, there are things like the healthcare system that really make American employers less competitive.
In your book, there's a chapter dealing with globalization. I think maybe you're one of the few American labor leaders who have actually traveled to China, our new, you know, big competitor, the competitor for, you know, to make things that Americans are buying. And you did something I think you describe in your book as sort of a heresy within the U.S. labor movement, which is you met with the leaders of the Communist Party-dominated unions in China. Did you find that there were things, maybe orthodoxies, myths, that you felt you need to challenge at this point about China that American workers have?
Oh, well, first of all, I think we just need to understand China. I mean, this is the first real economic competitor that America's ever had. Now, half of the concrete that was poured in the world last year was poured in China. 90% of all the scientists will come from the Asia-Pacific region by 2010. United States had 65,000 Intel Science Fair finalists, a record number. China had 6 million. They're graduating more kids from college than we are. So I think that we need to understand this is not Japan 20 years ago when the issue was quality. This is a real economic competitor. You know, two is I think the Chinese unions are waking up to the fact they're dealing with multinational employers. And what's really remarkable is when you talk to a Chinese worker who works in Walmart, they're not much different in terms of the way they think about their job from the worker in Brazil who works for Walmart, or Korea that works for Walmart, or the U.S., Canada, or Mexico. Workers of the world unite used to be a slogan. Now it's the fact that we all work for the same employer. It's not about ideology. It's about how do we change our lives. And you see in China that the market economy is creating all kinds of contradictions for the Chinese unions, who were, in essence, state-dominated public sector unions. Now they're dealing with Walmart and Kodak and McDonald's and Halliburton and companies that, you know, really are not very welcoming. And I think they're beginning to understand that having friends around the world and thinking a little bit differently might be important.
In your book, again, A Country That Works, Getting America Back on Track, you talk about some ideas for organizing internationally. You deal with that. You know, it seems to me, too, also that the crux of your critique of the AFL-CIO was maybe a return to the CIO idea of organizing in one industry. If you're steel workers, you organize all the steel workers, that kind of thing. SEIU maybe has attempted to stick to three things. Why do you think others were resistant to your critique about, you know, having 12 unions in the airline industry, for example?
You know, I think everybody's a president sometimes. This isn't about members, unfortunately. It really is about leaders. And unfortunately, you know, we're not doing everything in our power to try to maximize the ability to change members' lives. And I tried for 10 years in the AFL-CIO to say, it makes no sense to have 13 unions that don't coordinate and cooperate. It doesn't make any sense to have 14 unions organizing nurses and 30 unions organizing hotel workers. It's just, we live in a very sophisticated world. We have to have different relationships with our partners, and when we compete against each other, there's no way for the workers in the end to really win. And so, you know, I think leaders have just failed to grasp the significance of the moment, and I'm afraid to say they've been not as responsive to the needs of their members as we need to be.
You know, given that that was part of the, you know, the, one of the, I think, the key parts of your critique of the AFL, I thought, you know, it seemed like strange then that one of the unions that left the AFL to be with you is the Teamsters. That's sort of the epitome of what you might call general unionism, where they basically want to organize, unionize anybody that wants to be in the union, regardless of what industry it might be. Do you find that that is a kind of a strange alliance with the Teamsters?
Well, I'd say, listen, we all don't have clean hands in terms of our history. The question really is building a new history. And I think we certainly see with the Teamsters Union and the UFCW, and in many cases where the unions we had some of the most problems with in healthcare and some of the other industries that were involved in the public sector, you know, all of a sudden we're seeing that they're forming national industry groupings. They're really beginning to focus on organizing wholesale, not retail. You know, we've done this joint campaign with the Teamsters around, you know, this foreign-owned, globally owned, multinational school bus company. And so I think, you know, none of us have clean hands. The question is, you know, change is inevitable. You know, progress is optional. And I think unions now have to make the kind of changes and make the kind of progress that we need for workers to succeed in this 21st century.
Andy Stern, your book, A Country That Works, you know, you sort of deal with your own history rising up in SEIU, also sort of go behind the scenes a little bit to the debates that were occurring at the AFL-CIO Executive Board. Of course, that's of interest to sort of quasi-insiders like myself, a labor journalist. But you also share your ideas for how to, you know, remake the labor movement and really how to, you know, bring back that promise of the American dream and so forth. You know, left out of the book, it seemed to me, was a discussion of anything that's happened since the split in Change to Win. You mentioned one organizing conference, but it's been a year now. Has Change to Win, this is the federation that you formed with the folks that left the AFL, has it been all that you hoped it would be?
Well, I think here's what we now know. We have a new federation. Took a lot of effort to get it started, hire staff, get focused. You know, that's been accomplished. We were able to very successfully, I think, increase the opportunity in some of the ongoing campaigns that we inherited as Change to Win, Hotel Workers Rising, the efforts that we and now the Teamsters were brought in to do this campaign with First Group, a school bus company. So I think we enhanced the value of things that were going on. Now the real challenge is to roll out our own campaign. You know, things that are fundamentally new, to have different kinds of discussions with American business leaders about, you know, are there different ways to deal with a healthcare issue, and are there different kind of relationships we can have that will allow us to grow stronger. And so, you know, I think we set the stage. I think we've enhanced the campaigns of the unions that we've had. I think we're about to set some real goals about growth amongst the unions that we'll hold each other accountable to, and resource allocation that we're going to hold each other accountable to. So I think we're setting the stage for the future. Now, I think it is fair to ask ourselves in the next year or two, you know, how successful are we?
Okay.
And we are back here at Membership Central. This is our last pledge break for Labor Radio. We need you to call in at 503-232-8818 or outside the Portland metro area, 1-877-500-5266. And give a little money to the station that brings you this working-class radio that you can't get anywhere else.
Yep, Rosie the Riveter here is also in person, and she says, we can do it, and you can do it, by calling 503-232-8818. Or if you live outside Stumptown, 1-877-500-KBOO.
It takes a lot of hands to make things work around here. It also takes a few dollars, but we're spreading it out over a large variety of people. We have thousands of members, but we need more, and we also need those members that are already members to step forward and continue to contribute to keep this station on the air at 503-232-8818. It costs about $80 an hour, so we need you to contribute either $60 or $120, or if you can afford more, that's great. We can take it right out of your checking account. You don't even have to fork over that entire amount right away. We can take it out in little, small, bite-sized pieces that will make it much easier on your budget, and You will be supporting a great station at 503-232-8818.
You just heard a cell phone in the back, but unfortunately it's a wrong phone we want to hear. In fact, 86% of our annual budget here at KABU comes from people like yourself. And that basically explains loud and clear why we are a community radio station. When we say we're community, we mean community. 86% of our entire budget of $700,000 is powered by people like yourself listening right now. And in fact, 10% of our listeners who join KABU are members. And basically, we're trying to get the other 90% of you out there engaged too. We are a community radio station that has only 10 permanent full-time staff, and we have over 450 KABU volunteers, including myself and he right here. And you could, you know, make your voice loud and clear. You could make a proclamation that says, "I support community radio. I'm going to keep this alive," and you can make it alive, and you can do it by calling 503-232-8818. And again, if you live outside the Portland metropolitan area, it's toll-free at 1-877-500-5266.
And if you need a little extra incentive for a $75 minimum pledge, you can get the book, A Country That Works, by the phone interview guest you just heard on Labor Radio by Andy Stern, the head of the SEIU. And it's a look at working people of the U.S. by the longtime union activist Andy Stern. If you liked what he had to say on the interview, see what he has to say in print form. You can get that for a $75 minimum pledge at 503-526-8859. Out there in the Willamette Valley, out in the gorge, you can dial toll-free 1-877-500-5266.
We don't burn alleged money drawing candles for nothing here. Give our volunteers, you know, who are sitting by the phone something to do. And, you know, Sir Nomingham is taking a nap as it is right there. And, but you could wake him up out of his little seat by calling 503-232-8818. And we're going to be returning to Labor Radio in 15 seconds. So I'm just going to reiterate the number one more time. 503-232-8818. You did it!
You just joined us. You're listening to Labor Radio on KBOO FM Portland. We're talking with Andy Stern, who is the leader of the second largest union in America and author of a book, A Country That Works. He'll be in Portland October 17th. We'll have that information about his appearance again later in the broadcast. Andy, I want to talk about health care. It seemed to me like a year or two ago you were in Portland at a forum of the Oregon Health Forum. It's a health care policy group. And you said basically that this country needs a revolution in health care and that the employer-paid model of health care is dead. At the time, you were sort of cagey, I thought, about pushing any solutions of your own. In your book now, you actually have a few. Where do you think America ought to go to get universal health care? And actually, if I might jump in even and add, you were on the Colbert Report, a very entertaining little broadcast, Stephen Colbert's show. He called you Comrade Stern. I thought the line that you had that got the most applause on that show was when you talked about universal health care.
Yeah, that was certainly true. That I think the Colbert fans, cynical as they all may be about politics and politicians like the rest of us, you know, do understand we need to do something about health care. This is not a very complicated issue anymore because America business are the only employers in the world now who are putting the price of health care on the cost of their product, trying to sell it overseas when every other employer, you know, is not paying for health care and pricing it into their sales. And so we are making American business non-competitive. Forget the moral issue that 46 million people don't have health care. That's a tragedy in itself. But now we have an economic one that good jobs in America aren't being created in terms of our ability to compete globally. So that's the framework. The employer-based health care system is dead because the truth is my son who's 20 is going to have 9 to 12 jobs by the time he's 35. 25% of all American workers are now contingent, meaning they don't have a full-time employer, and only one-third of the employers that exist today will even be economically viable 25 years. So we're just seeing a massive change in the economy. So to imagine an employer-based healthcare system, you know, is going to mean that no one's going to really have portability, everyone's going to have constant pre-existing conditions, and no one's going to have the same medical record. They're going to start over and over and over again and, you know, then deal with COBRA every time they lose their job. And so we need a new American system that provides quality, affordable health care for all. That's what I said in Portland, and I still believe it even more so today. And I think we're seeing CEOs and others begin to understand the need to make change. Then what do we do? Well, the good news is we can have an American system. If we can have a Canadian system or Scandinavian system. We could use FEPHB, Medicare for All. You can take your choice. You can go around the country and look at what different states have done. You know, Governor Kitzhaber has a whole series of incredibly good ideas about what we're going to do about health care. And so I'm not really, you know, wedded to any particular solution, as long in the end everyone has access to quality, affordable health care. People have choice of doctors. We fund preventative care. We use electronic medical records. We use, and everyone has access to the best medical technology in the world. I don't think it's that complicated. I just think we're lacking the political will right now. America needs a plan to change its health care system.
You talk in your book also, you know, about changing the way the union movement operates, taking advantage of the internet opportunities. I thought it was a very interesting experiment that you guys in SEIU had a few years ago called Since Sliced Bread. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, we felt like the best ideas in America weren't coming from Washington, D.C. You know, anyone who lives there, it's kind of a fairly polluted environment, particularly for new thinking. And so, you know, we wondered whether Americans had some good ideas, and we started a website and a contest called SinceSliceBread.com, and we asked Americans, now, what would you do in terms to make this a country that works? And lo and behold, you know, we had over 20,000 people enter the contest. We had over 1 million people come to the website. We had these incredible debates that just showed to me that Americans are hungry to be involved in a discussion about their future. They're worried. They're anxious. And they have very good reasons to be so. And so, you know, Since Sliced Bread just was an opportunity to say there are ideas out there in America, and some very good ones, and that people want to participate. And in the end, it's people. We can't wait for the President of the United States. We can't wait for a new Congress. American people need to make some demands about change in this country.
I thought it was interesting that in the you know, aftermath of the that experiment, there was a survey you guys did of the people who took part to find out what were the top issues and so forth, where should you go forward. Energy, transportation, and the environment were listed as the number one issue by respondents. That was higher than health care and seven times as high as taxes or Social Security or jobs even as an issue. And I thought that was really interesting because, of course, you know, you're from a union background. You know, is SEIU going to take some leadership on the issue of climate change and global warming?
You know, we are one of the few unions, you know, for instance, that were opposed to the drilling in the Arctic wildlife. We have taken a position, you know, about climate change. We just opened a new headquarters. I'm proud to say it's a gold green building, one of the probably the first union building to be green in America. We're talking to Seventh Generation and other companies about clean chemicals. So, you know, I think we understand that being healthy is not just about having a health care plan. It's about having a healthy country, healthy air, healthy water, and a healthy environment at work.
And actually, a few years ago, your ex-wife, Jane Perkins, was involved in a campaign to get the AFL to go on board supporting the Kyoto Protocols. That didn't happen. Any idea why the union movement was resisting?
Well, I mean, I think we're very focused at times on the jobs in the short run, and for good reason. I mean, when you have an economy right now where workers haven't gotten a raise overall for 5 years, when people have negative savings, when we have the greatest, highest amount of income going to profits in the worker history and the lowest amount going to wages in history, you know, people have every right to be anxious. They're losing their health care. They're frightened about their retirement. So when you have a good job that provides benefits, you know, people will fight to keep it. And the real question is, where is the next generation of good jobs in America? It's turned, and what is the plan for America to have a country that works for everyone?
I guess, you know, some of the change is going to have to end up being political, whether that's led by politicians or by voters, it's not clear. I thought one of the more interesting parts of your book, actually, was your critique of the Democratic Party. And I'll read a quote here because I thought it was pretty succinct. You said, "Our members rightly saw us as too wedded to the Democratic establishment, a political party with no united agenda on worker issues."
Well, I think it speaks for itself. I say that Thomas Frank, in the book, I also say that Thomas Frank, you know, wrote a book, and, you know, What's the Matter with Kansas? And I'll paraphrase it. He said, what's the matter with Kansas is, you know, the matter with the Democratic Party is they're Chardonnay sipping, latte drinking, Volvo driving, Harvard and Yale educated liberals. And he said, that's the way they're perceived. And I think I say in my book, no, that's who they are. And we don't have a party right now that I think really represents the interest of American workers. And I think you sense it. So when people say, why do people vote against their interests? I think the right question is, where are the people standing up for their interests?
Right, and in your experience within the Democratic Party, that's sort of the Washington, D.C. power elite, if I may, you know, you were pretty discouraged, I guess. At the 2004 Democratic Convention, for example, you talk about who sat next to Theresa Hines Carey and who hosted the convention. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, no, first of all, the opening night reception for the convention, I write about in my book, you know, which was given for the Clintons, you know, was given by a nursing home owner who had was in the process of not signing a contract with the union, and even more importantly, trying to promote a decertification of the union, and they got the most honored spot as sponsors of the opening night reception. And then on the night that John Kerry was making his address and he was being introduced to the nation, and we see this in the President's State of the Union address, who gets to sit in the box becomes very symbolic. And, you know, George Bush and Bill Clinton, you know, they would put a firefighter or a Peace Corps member or a teacher from an urban school to really represent the heroes of America. And who does John Kerry put in the box but Bob Rubin? Now, I'm not sure. Maybe that got some votes on Wall Street, but those aren't the kind of symbolic gestures that American workers are looking for. They want to know that someone is going to stand up for people like them. And I think the 2004 election, you know, people were really unclear of who really were standing up for American workers and having the kind of good jobs and having a retirement system that worked for them and making sure their kids weren't leaving college burdened with loans. America needs a plan, and we need some leaders who are going to step forward and make some bold and sweeping and fundamental changes.
Andy Stern, author of A Country That Works, Getting America Back on Track. In your book, you invite feedback and debate, and you encourage readers to go to acountrythatworks.com to tell you what they think. I did, actually, and there's not really a way to tell you what we think.
Well, then we're going to have to fix that, Don, that's for sure.
Actually, there's this sort of brings me to a whole issue that I wonder. You know, I see, and pardon me, my critique here, but I've watched SEIU and AFL-CIO under Sweeney for years and years, and I notice a sort of a tendency to sort of unveil these bold new proposals, and there's a press release and a website and so forth, and then you never hear about it in 3 months or 6 months or a year. And I wonder if you think maybe SEIU might be guilty of that as well. There's a number of websites that go up and then come down. A journal that you had on Purple Ocean apparently hasn't been updated since May 2005.
Yeah, I mean, I think we are very in the early and probably inadequate stages of trying to figure out how to use technology appropriately. And I think you're right. We have a tendency to try more new ideas over and over again, you know, some of which go on for a long time, some of which you say we probably should end and say they were, you know, interesting experiments. The question really is, and you're asking the right question, is how are we going to have an interactive, you know, discussion with people, and how does it not get polluted like some of these websites did, with people just sort of hanging out, you know, trashing everyone that shows up. And I just think it's a learning experience, and, you know, A Country That Works will by tomorrow have some way for people to interact with it and not just be a, you know, a one-dimensional kind of tool, because that really doesn't serve a purpose.
I wanted to end with, you know, mentioning what I thought was a very nice metaphor towards the end of your book. You talk about having sort of waited for years for some leader to emerge, like Martin Luther King or Robert, you know, Kennedy, that sort of thing, and then thinking that, you know, this leader is like a maybe someone who's setting the direction of a sailboat, but you need the wind for it to go anywhere. The wind is the people. It's the mass movement. Do you see that on the horizon, and how's that going to come about?
Well, I'm not sure exactly how it's going to come about. I'm not sure that, you know, Rosa Parks knew what she was going to set off when she said, you know, she wasn't going to move to the back of the bus. I'm not sure Lech Walesa quite understood what he was going to set off, you know, when he was at the shipyards in Gdansk. I'm not sure that, you know, people that showed up for the first immigrant marches in this country ever appreciated how profoundly, you know, huge and symbolic they were going to be. All I know is waiting for change to come out of Washington, D.C. has never been a good bet. If you had waited for Lyndon Johnson to pass the civil rights movement, I think, you know, we'd still be waiting for those kind of changes. If women had waited for Congress to change things instead of Betty Friedan and Gloria Steinem and a whole generation of courageous women, we'd still be waiting. If Ralph Nader hadn't sort of taken on corporate America about consumer safety, who knows what would happen? You never know what is going to happen. You know, change is inevitable, but progress is optional, and progress only comes, I believe, when people lift their voices. And as you said, you can be the captain of a sailboat. You can proudly stand and put your hand on the tiller and try to steer the boat in a direction, and all you're going to do is go in circles, unless there's wind. And the wind are the voices of people. And I believe we are coming to a moment where people are going to say, this is the greatest country on earth. The American dream is something I believe in, and I don't want to be part of leaving my kids in America where they are the first generation to do worse than their parents. That's not the America we want. That's not the America we need, and it is now in all of our powers to do something about it.
Andy Stern, author of A Country That Works. I want to thank you for joining us on Labor Radio.
Thank you, Don.
We've been talking with Andy Stern, who's the president of SEIU, the second largest union in America, and also the fastest growing author of A Country That Works, Getting America Back on Track. He'll be in Portland once again October 17th at noon at Palace Books, the only major union bookstore in the country. He'll also appear that night at the Lucky Labrador Pub, 1945 Northwest Quimby, at 7 p.m.
Good evening. You've been listening to Labor Radio. My name is Ken Allen.
And this is Mary Beth Healy.
We've got an extra 10 minutes tonight, so we're going to take advantage of it. You've been listening to Andy Stern, President of Service Employees International Union, and the author of a new book, A Country That Works, and Nomi Prinz, an author of a book called Jacked, How Conservatives Are Picking Your Pocket, Whether You Voted for Them or Not. These are the kind of programs we can have on Labor Radio. We started the program tonight with a little bit of a rant about politics, and we weren't quite done ranting, so we're going to take a few more minutes. I guess the thing that's got me most upset in the last couple of weeks, I'll go back to, is the negative campaigns that we're seeing. We're all assaulted by a lot of television, radio, and mail pieces now that, for the most part, Mary Beth, we're seeing a lot of negativity.
Well, you know, I think that there's a... I think politicians on both sides of the aisle understand that this is a crucial election year. And, you know, we all, I think they're hoping that, indeed, going to what you said earlier with it really being a voter suppression tactic, but also that there's a lot at stake. In our state alone, we have a governor's race, control of the state house and the state senate, which quite frankly, you know, the house, and we've talked about this before, thwarted health care reform in the last session. I think looking to, you know, the fight that was in the session around keeping the minimum wage that voters had approved, that politicians on both sides understand the importance and they think negative campaigning works. And so what we have to prove is that it doesn't, and that what we are looking for is a vote for hope, right? And to keep a positive agenda. And clearly, you have to point out what your opponents are doing. But some people in some legislative districts, Ken, they're getting 30. They've already gotten 30 pieces of mail.
Yeah, I think the
and ballots aren't even out yet.
I think both of the guests tonight really talked a lot about. That voters need to be talked to about their economic interests, and politicians need to be framing that. We talk a lot on Labor Radio about working class issues, and I'd say to those politicians out there that are running right now, you need to talk about the price of gas, you need to talk about health care, you need to talk about what credit card companies are doing, payday loans. All of these issues are what working people really care about, and if we have strong politicians articulating some solutions in those areas, people are going to get out and vote for them.
That's right. Give people something to vote for, and they will vote.
The other thing, the strongest way to fight back against negative campaigning is activism. And so I shout out to folks tonight, you know, get out there and phone bank, find a candidate that you want to canvass for, go to a rally for the candidates that you support. There will be a rally this Saturday, Labor rally for Governor Kulongoski, Saturday, October 14th at 9:30 a.m. It's at the 7th and Davis location of the Kulongoski for Governor headquarters. And the Secretary of Treasury for my union, AFSCME, William Lucy, will be here as the keynote speaker. And Mr. Lucy has been involved with fights for working people for over 40 years. Bill Lucy was in Memphis fighting for the sanitation workers when Dr. King was killed. So he'll have a good speech that everybody can listen to on behalf of the governor. You can't have a clearer choice in this governor's race between somebody that's for working people and somebody like that quote that I read before. I can't imagine Ron Saxon ever knowing how a regular working piece person gets along in life.
Yeah, how much is your health care premium, Ron? And that's a key issue, for many voters. As Nomi was pointing out, it was the number one issue that she found across the country in talking to people, no matter what their economic status was. And I think that gives us a great opportunity to really press candidates about what is your plan. Andy talked about a plan as well. And don't let politicians get away with any jargon. Ask them specifically, what will you do to make my health insurance premium more affordable. And I think the governor has stepped out, Ken, and has a plan to cover all children as part of a longer-range universal health care system. We are the only industrialized nation in the world that doesn't provide health care for our citizens, and it really is an outrage. And so I always want to rant about health care, as you know.
You know, you need to talk to your neighbors, your family members. Don't let them get discouraged by the negative campaigns. There's a lot of good things to vote for on this ballot. We've got school initiatives in Portland and Beaverton, library levies. So get out there and vote. Be active. And thank you for listening to Labor Radio.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from SEIU Local 503 OPEU, whose mission is to improve the quality of life through worker empowerment and a progressive labor movement, and whose members deliver quality public services to Oregonians every day. And also by Ironworkers, Shopmen's Local 516, and the Pacific Northwest Ironworkers District Council, proudly fighting to preserve living wage jobs and resisting their outsourcing. Information at 503-257-4743.